The following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
Well, there goes the neighborhood. Welcome, everybody, to the 126th episode of Dave's Gone By. It is Thursday, May 5th, 2005. Hope you all had a great Passover. Hope you have nice plans for Mother's Day. And I hope you'll stay with us now through 8 o'clock on AM 1240 WGBB and live streaming on the web at am1240wgbb.com. Very excited about tonight's show. I've been promoting it for about a month now, and it is finally here. Long-time listeners to the program know that I've had a wide variety of musical guests on the show, from all over the spectrum, the most bass creatures to people who are in treble. Sorry. But musically, we have run the gamut from a folky like Tom Paxton to indie rock from Rob Szabo to straight pop from Neil Sedaka and October Project to cabaret style from Jeffrey Tozer and Dottie Berman. And novelty music from Art Paul Schlosser and Housewives on Prozac. We've talked about opera with Stefan Zucker and Indian music with a show about Jagjit Singh. And remember Steve the Whistler Herbst, who came on the show and whistled West Side Story and Stevie Wonder and Led Zeppelin? He's actually been named International Whistling Entertainer of the Year for the third consecutive year by the Franklin County Arts Council of Lewisburg, North Carolina. They hold an annual whistling convention and competition, so congratulations to Steve. Admittedly, one of the more unusual musicians we've had on the program. But Dave's Gone By is not a music show per se. We don't do music every week, so we really haven't covered the whole spectrum. I've played the occasional rap or country record, but haven't gone in depth, haven't really played any blues or straight classical or Cuban throat gargling. And considering how much of it I still listen to, I short shrifted punk and especially post-punk new wave. But tonight, we make up for that somewhat with one of the originals, one of the people who came to define the early sound and attitude of that scene in the late 70s. I mean, you had the hardcore band stuff from the Pistols and the Damned and the Clash, and then that kind of got mixed in with a singer-songwriter as star ethos that took hold in the late 60s and early 70s. What happens when the Clash meets Bob Dylan? You get Elvis Costello. What happens when the Ramones discover jazz and disco? Something that sounds like Ian Dury. And what happens when the Buzzcocks meet Lonnie Donegan? Probably something that sounds like our guest this evening, Eric Goulden, or sounded like Eric back in the mid-1970s when the Sussex-born art student started playing in pubs and clubs, just when the punk scene showed that all you needed to make music was a guitar, a what-the-hell attitude, and a little snarl in your voice. And in 1976, the Stiff's record label took notice, snapping up talents like Nick Lowe, Ian Dury, Elvis Costello, and Eric Goulden. Although by the time they released his first single, Whole Wide World, backed with Semaphore Signals, he was going by the nickname that has stuck to this day, Reckless Eric.
When I was a young boy, my mama said to me, there's only one girl in the world for you, but she probably lives since I ate it. I call the whole wide world, I call the whole wide world, just to find out.
one of the seminal punk-era new wave songs, Whole Wide World, written and sung in that unmistakable voice by none other than Reckless Eric. And from 1976 to 79, Eric was right up there with Elvis and Ian Dury as leading performers of the singer-songwriter New Wave. And unlike other people in the rock biz, sudden fame didn't spoil Eric Golden. Unfortunately, alcohol did, and as did the changing music scene, which kind of left him behind in the 80s. But he sobered up, wised up, and kept making music. He wrote a well-received autobiography, he's been playing live again, and he's released a handful of albums, including a new one, Bungalow High, that's getting the most attention of anything he's done since the late 70s. So tonight, on Dave's Gone By, with us in the studio will be the one and only Reckless Eric. And that's pretty much the whole show, except we'll also give a look to the brand new theater season on our weekly Inside Broadway segment, brought to you by Total Theater and the theater magazine Performing Arts Insider, your guide to Broadway and beyond. And a reminder that this show is also co-sponsored by Hewlett Minuteman Press for all your printing and copying needs, with 10% off for listeners to Dave's Gone By, which is hosted by yours truly, Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, theater critic, journalist, humorist, and post-punk progressive pundit, bringing you an hour of smart talk, silly talk, special talk, and music. All of it is rated DGB 13, kind of like the warning label they put on CDs, only Walmart hasn't blacklisted me yet. Hey, give me time. I'm hoping the local Chinese takeout will blacklist me, you know, just to get the ball rolling. And then there's a fruit and vegetable store a couple of blocks from where I live. They don't speak English too well, so it might be hard to convince them to be offended by the show. I mean, I could make fun of bananas in a lewd fashion, perhaps, but even that might go over their heads. I think there's a maternity clothing store on West Broadway. I could probably offend them just by saying something evil about babies, which are delicious when roasted on an open spit, by the way. After you molest them, of course. Yeah, that should do it. And I'm not looking for an FCC fine, just the buzz and notoriety of being forbidden fruit. Or fruit and vegetables, if the Pakistanis will go for it. But don't worry. DGB 13 isn't like an X or an NC-17. It's probably even closer to PG than PG-13, so it's totally safe, and we will be right back to start this charming, harmless family show right after this commercial message, which gives me time to snack on a baby or two. Yum, yum.
Hey, can I get these things copied?
Yeah, dude, 15 cents a page, plus ink, labor, parts.
Parts? Yeah, I need that of heavy stock, bound and laminated.
Whoa, we don't do that.
All right, just copies then.
No problem, I'll take a week or two.
What? Give me my copies back.
Just a minute, man.
That's it. Minuteman. I should have gone to Hewlett Minuteman Press. They do everything. Copying, shipping, gifts, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett.
Ain't that next to Fortunoff?
Out of my way, hippie. I'm off to Hewlett Minuteman Press.
Copy on, dude.
Dave's Gone By listeners know I love a good play on words. But let me say a good word on plays, my plays, collected in a lovely book called Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. Comedies that range from strange to deranged, from sad to satirical, fun to read, and unmistakably Dave. Just $20 hardcover, $12 soft. Put down that crappy bestseller and pick up some laughs. 516-295-1511 or davesgoneby.com. Inside Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater's Performing Arts Insider, your everything theater guide. Is today the first day of the rest of your life? Maybe, maybe not. But it is the first day of the brand new Broadway season. Last night's opening of Sweet Charity marked the official close of the 2004-2005 season, which means any show opening from today on does not qualify for this year's Tonys, or Drama Desks, or Outer Critics Circle Awards, for that matter. The Tonys happen the first Sunday in June, and there will be a couple of Broadway shows opening in the late spring and summer, but generally it stays pretty quiet until October. Of course, even when shows aren't opening, they're being planned, developed, rehearsed, tried out of town, and we already know several of the productions due to tread the boards next season, well, this season. For example, one of the definites is Lennon, a musical pastiche about the life of the late Beatle. Don Scardino is directing the show, which has 12 different actors portraying John Lennon during various stages of his life. Of course, there's a bunch of Lennon songs in it, including Imagine, The Ballad of John and Yoko, and Woman is the Nigger of the World, sung, aptly enough, by a black woman. And most of the dialogue is actual quotes from John and Yoko Ono. Reviews were very mixed, but promising when Lennon tried out at San Francisco's Orpheum Theater in April. The show was going to move on to Boston, but then it decided to skip another regional venue, do a little retooling, and go right to Broadway, where it opens in late July. Also arriving in late summer are Esai Morales and Billy Dee Williams in The Mambo Kings, a musical adaptation of the Oscar Hijuelos novel and the popular movie. That show, about rival Cuban brothers, also tries out in San Francisco later this month. On the smaller, quieter side, we get a couple of shows, solo shows this summer. Primo, a one-man play about Holocaust survivor, author-philosopher, and suicide committer, Primo Levi. And Mark Twain Tonight, the triumphant return of Hal Holbrook to the show that made his name. He first did it off-Broadway in 1959, then he brought it uptown in 1966, where he won the Best Actor Tony for spouting the wit and wisdom of Samuel Clemens. The show plays through June, and when it closes, the same theater hosts a Broadway cabaret turn by none other than Suzanne Somers. Yes, it's called The Blonde and the Thunderbird, named for her cameo appearance in American Graffiti. Suzanne, who's found a second career pitching everything from cookies to hormone therapy on the Home Shopping Network, sings, dances, and tells her life story at the Brooks Atkinson Theater from early July through Labor Day. So that basically takes us through the summer. But what about autumn and beyond? Are there big Broadway shows coming up for later in the season? You bet. And I'll tell you a couple, but you already know what they are if you subscribe to Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. Performing Arts Insider has been a bible of the theater industry for more than 60 years. Every issue has a calendar listing of when shows are opening, closing, changing casts, and comprehensive listings of who is in every show, on, off, and off Broadway. Who are the designers, the producers, the agents? Are the shows any good? What's the gossip? What's the news? Performing Arts Insider has the scoop. It comes out 21 times a year by subscription, also available monthly, 12 times a year. For both subscription plans, Dave's Gone By listeners get 10% off. The details are at performingartsinsider.com, or you can call Total Theater at 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511. Just leave a message and say, I want to know about Broadway theater, cabaret, opera, dance, all the awards, and you'll get everything you need to know every month in the pages of Performing Arts Insider. It's Broadway the best way. And speaking of Broadway at its best, there are certainly some promising shows circling Times Square next fall, winter, and spring. Most anticipated is the London hit Jerry Springer, the Opera. That's right, a modern satirical opera based on one of the most outrageous programs in American TV history. This one also will try out in San Francisco and then come to Broadway in October. Also due in October, a revival of The Odd Couple. And before you say ho-hum, be advised, producers, fans, that the show, directed by Joe Mantello, will star Nathan Lane as Oscar and Matthew Broderick as Felix. Fall will also see a revival of Stephen Sondheim's masterpiece, well, one of, Sweeney Todd. Rumor has it both Patti LuPone and Cyndi Lauper are being considered for Mrs. Lovett. And casting notices asked that all performers also be able to play their own musical instruments on stage. And musical talents in theater don't get more revered than Gina Rivera. She'll bring her autobiographical review, The Dancer's Life, to Broadway in October. I guess She's hoping it'll do for her what The Blonde and the Thunderbird will no doubt do for Suzanne Somers. Other shows likely for next season include a revival of The Three Penny Opera, newly adapted by Wallace Shawn, the latest Andrew Lloyd Webber tuner, The Woman in White, a musical version of the Adam Sandler comedy The Wedding Singer, Cynthia Nixon starring in the Lanford Wilson classic Tally's Folly, and Diana Rigg doing The Importance of Being Earnest. So, if you agree that Broadway and theater are earnestly important, or importantly earnest, follow the Broadway season in the pages of Performing Arts Insider, and keep listening every week to Dave's Gone By for all the news inside Broadway.
We've just been inside Broadway, thanks to TotalTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider. Eat, eat, use, use, buy, buy. Look at me. I'm the American consumer, and I want to spend my money on stores, restaurants, showrooms, travel agencies, mail order catalogs. Sell me stuff. Have you reached me? Well, I listen to Dave's Gone By, so if you advertise there, you'll certainly have my attention. Dave's Gone By has all the details, or email davesgoneby@aol.com for the rate card. I'm listening. Sell me what you got. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB in Freeport, New York, live streaming on the web at am1240wgbb.com and on this Dave's Got Guests segment. I'm pretty thrilled. We've had some famous people on this program and some not so famous people and one or two infamous people. I guess this fella falls into the category of all three, which is kind of interesting, and we'll discuss the various permutations of that, but this is exciting for a lot of reasons. I mean, I was a little bit late getting into the whole post-punk new wave scene and all that represented. I mean, I had some friends who were in it a bit before I was, and they were bringing home the first Pretenders album or the early Stiffs label music, people like Elvis Costello or Nick Lowe or the great Ian Dury, and another person whom I kind of liked instantly when I first heard his songs, because although they were new wave and the voice was certainly a little different from the normal pop slick radio voice, the songs had this very catchy, kind of old style, real fun and hummable craft to them. And this fellow's name, I don't think anybody even knew his last name in those years. He was just known by the nickname Reckless Eric. So we're going to get into where that nickname came from and where he's come from in the past, 30 years. Since those times. So I want to welcome to the States and to the studio, Reckless Eric Goulden. Hey, Eric.
Hello.
You're welcome here.
Yeah.
What do you think of Babylon, Long Island so far? You don't seem terribly impressed.
Well, no, I'm not unimpressed. I'm thrilled to bits. I got a train here from New York, from Penn Station.
Mm-hmm.
I'm terribly unimpressed with the transport system here. I mean, it works, but I'm just as a visitor.
Yeah.
I just spend my time terrified. I call it humiliation time.
Because of the conductors or the ticket takers.
Everything you have to. I don't know. I don't know how do New Yorkers or Americans learn. Learn the transport system. Am I born with the information? Do you come equipped with genes that carry all the information? Because first thing, I don't know where to get a ticket, so I go to the box and there's a man or a woman sitting in the box with a big microphone, and I go, excuse me, you know, because I'm English and we're very polite and all that, and I'd like to buy a ticket to go to, because in England you always give the destination, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to buy a ticket to go to such and such, and they look at me and I go like that into the microphone. I don't know what the hell they're saying, you know.
Yeah.
It's humiliating.
Mm.
And then of course you haven't got the right, you know, the right ticket or the ticket, the thing that you slide through, the sliding thing, you do it the wrong way and everyone behind you goes, well, it doesn't take much to put a Metro card into the machine, you know.
Yeah, meanwhile, every single one of them has had the same problem at some point with a, you know, Metro card where the strip is worn down and they put it the wrong way.
Yeah.
They're just angry because they're late.
So everybody's screaming at you by this time, you know. It's got better. I've learnt that business, but of course I get into Penn Station, I can't find where to buy a ticket.
Right. Well, there's electronic booths, and they've got the real humans. So did you go to the humans?
No, I couldn't find any human. But I asked a human woman, but I think she thought I meant something else. But she was.
You wanted to put your ticket in her slot.
The person who was standing still, you know, and. Yeah, I asked a man wearing some sort of official-looking badge, but he didn't know either. You know, but I found it eventually.
Good.
I found it. I got him.
I have to say, my memories of the tube, or, you know, the English system, it was very, very well laid out, but you would figure, you know, you would get off one escalator or place, and then it would look like you'd just go over to get the other connecting train, and it would actually be half a mile away underground.
Oh, it was just this endless trek.
Sometimes
it's quicker not to change trains. It's actually quicker just to get out at Green Park and walk to Piccadilly or whatever it is, rather than change trains to take the one stop.
Right, yeah.
And it's probably cheaper as well, because it costs a different amount to every different station. I don't know how they work that out.
Yeah, actually, the one thing about the subways is still, it's one fare all the way. Unlike the Long Island Railroad, you really can go to, like, Far Rockaway on the subway for $2.
Oh, I went to Coney Island. I went with my girlfriend on Sunday. We went to Coney Island.
Cool.
Have you been there?
Not since I was a child.
We went on the big wheel, you know. She said, look, you've got to go on the big wheel. It's Coney Island. And then we get there, and I'm looking, and it looks a bit high, you know, and I don't want to say, I've never actually been on a big wheel before. I'm a bit nervous, you know. I said, right, okay, yeah, I'm up for it, yeah. we could take a static carriage, or we could take one of the swinging ones. And I'm sort of like, what do you mean a swinging one? She said, well, it kind of slides. And I'm thinking, I don't want to know about this. And so you can see all these wimpy-looking people, not many people, queuing up to get in the static carriages, and then there's all these sort of hard nuts, and they're getting asked, do you want to go swinging or static? And they're going, swinging! You know, and I'm thinking, and we're standing there in the swinging queue, and we're the most soft-looking people in it, and we're both starting to get nervous, so, but we get in it, and it's like a metal cage, you know, and you get clamped into it, locked in it, and I think, how are we going to get out of this? You know, what if they don't want to let us out? So that's all a bit nerve-wracking. And then the thing goes up, and you're thinking, this is very nice. Here it goes. Nothing to it, really. Lovely view. Get to the top. You're on top of the world there, looking down all over Coney Island. Suddenly it lurches over, and the whole car slides. It sort of plummets into space.
Wait, this isn't a Ferris wheel.
Yes, it is. But this thing is on a sliding contraption, so suddenly the whole of the world drops beneath you and you're plummeting, you're free-falling over Coney Island in a red metal cage with a seat in it.
And remember, this is fun. This is Americans' idea of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
Was this fun for you?
It was terrifying.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And of course, you know, I don't want to look like a pussy in front of my girlfriend, do I, you know?
Yeah, no, like a cat, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like some, you know. Well, so, like, I'm trying to... Well, we're both terrified, you know. So it starts to go... Eventually, it starts to go down. And,
if you've ever gone down with a pussy... Oh, I'm not even going to go there.
So it goes down, and I'm thinking, this is fine. Right, okay, well, glad that's over. I managed to... It doesn't stop. It gets to the bottom, and it carries on. And I think, oh, no, we're going up again. We've got to go through this whole damn thing again, which we did. And it was... I thought, it can't be as bad the second time, and it was worse.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I think it's because I knew what was happening. So we get out of that one, and, like...
And then you had three Frankfurters in a shake or something.
No, no, not at all. No, no, no. I had to walk around a bit to get over that. And
yeah, that's like my... I was in Disneyland about 8 or 9 years ago when I had a play done out in California.
Yeah.
And, like, the cast, they were all young people, and they go to Disneyland all the time, and I'd never been. And... you know, I went to be with them and to see it, because I hadn't been to Disney World, hadn't seen it. And for them, it was about the ride. So you would stand there for about 45 minutes in blazing sun to go on one ride, which was about 2.5 minutes long, and unpleasant. I'm a wuss, like you. And,
yeah.
Oh, I didn't get sick or anything, but I'm like, this is not fun for me. This is hell. I'm in hell.
Yeah, well.
All day long.
The Coney Island experience, right? It gets worse. I mean, we did some other things. We went to the Freak Show, and that was fun.
Oh, that is that already on?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, opened this weekend. And then we went on a ghost train that was good.
Ooh.
And I could take that. I could handle that. You know, I wasn't scared at all.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. By the way, was Todd Robbins at the Freak Show? He's like the carny guy. Was he part of that? He was on the show, and he had an off-Broadway show about a year and a half ago. Todd, tall guy, hammers stuff in his nose, but you may have seen a different nose hammer.
No, I didn't see a nose hammer. They didn't have a nose hammer.
Oh, no.
They had a man called Eek, who's incredibly tattooed, who lies on a bed of nails and then gets two men out of the audience to stand on an upturned bed of nails that's on top of him. And I don't know how he came out of that alone, actually.
I guess it's
and then
fun.
they had the sword swallower. That was the only thing I couldn't watch.
Oh, yeah.
I'm painting myself as a bit of a wimp here.
Well, no, I don't mind. Maybe that's a latent gay thing, God forbid. But I don't mind the sword swallower, you know, even when he comes up to you and kneels. But the...
well, it was a nice girl who was doing it, but I couldn't imagine, you know, how she was...
Oh, it was a girl. Oh, actually, yeah. I could watch it. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, she was very sexy and all the rest of it. But,
was the bearded girl there? She's been around a lot.
No, there was a girl with a tattooed face.
Oh.
And I thought, she looked very pretty and everything. I thought, when she gets to about 65, what's it going to be like then?
Oh. And it's basically going to be like the map of the tube in London, pretty much. So you just look at her, and it's like, ah, that's where that's going. That's Hampstead.
I think it might be the subway in somewhere like Oslo, actually.
But, oh, my gosh.
So, the Coney Island experience, I'm determined to finish this, because it got worse.
How do you get worse than that?
Well,
I mean, the Freak Show sounds good, but
you know
it's right.
What's it called? Switchback Roller Coaster.
Oh. Well, why did you go on?
Well, my girlfriend, Kelly, she says, look, we're in Coney Island, we've got to go on it. I went on it once, it's great. We've got to go on it, and I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, and she says, it's made of wood, and I'm thinking, I don't want to go on it even more than I didn't want to go on it before. Now it's made of wood, you know. And I remember a friend of mine who lives in Atlanta sort of mentioning it to me, because it's well famous, and saying, probably the people that maintain it are not qualified to do so. I mean, I'm sure that's not true, but all these things go through your head.
Yeah.
You know?
And one out of every, like, 10,000 people
I'll tell you what, I'll have a look at it. So we look at it, and we see the thing hurtling around all over the place with the people in it, and they've all got their arms in the air doing some sort of Mexican wave and having a great time. And I thought, well, they're all doing it. They're having a great time. I should be all right. So we go. Again, there's not a queue.
Really?
There was a lot of people on Coney Island in Coney Island at the time, but there was not a queue for this attraction.
Oh.
So, like, there's a line on the wall. It says, if you're below this height, you can't go on the ride. And I'm trying to get down. So we get two tickets. We get there, and like, I'm shuffling us back in the queue, so we won't be in the front because I don't want to see. So we get into one of these cars, and it's in the car in front. There was an enormously fat man, right. Which
good cushioning, you know.
Well, it made it worse because the thing set off, and I thought, this is it. I know this is a bad idea. I just know it. and it sets off, and it goes round a curve, and it starts to gather speed, and then it started to go uphill.
And it
went up until it was vertical. So I'm kind of like lying on my back with my feet in the air, as it were.
Well, that can be fun, but yeah.
Yeah, well, not in this case. Well, this fat bloke sort of bounced, in front of me. I'm thinking, this defies gravity. This thing is going up, and I'm thinking, if it's going up like this, it's going to have to come down. So we get to the top of it, and it suddenly... And I'm thinking, okay, I'm glad that's over. Just for a split second, it was fine. Nice view and everything. And then it went, turn round, and it just plummeted. It was free-falling through space. And it was like all my bones and bits of me were all going down in the wrong order and everything. And I'd left half of me back up there. And everyone's screaming, and suddenly I'm screaming as well, And it was undignified. It was terrible, and it's getting buffeted about, and it got to the bottom of this thing, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, oh, I'm still alive. Oh, I'm going to be a nicer person, and it just and it went up again. Yeah, it did the whole routine again, and it got worse every time it did it, and it buffeted you about, and you couldn't get out or anything. It's the worst thing. We got out. I was white.
Yeah.
People were asking me if I was all right. I was trembling.
You were really,
I could hardly walk. But I've all been reassembled in the wrong order anyway. And I can hardly walk. I'm like, are you all right? I'm going, I've been in car crashes that were more fun.
Oh my! And how'd your girlfriend like it?
Well,
she loved it. Right?
She wants to go again next week.
I knew it. Oh. Okay, and will you, or are you going to put your shaky foot down and say, no?
I don't know what I can do about that.
You do what all men do. You think of something else that's equally cool but not as scary. Divert her.
Diversionary tactics.
Museums are great. They're unscared, like a children's science museum. Cool things to do, but no pain.
Yeah, anything but that. Anything
better. Well, by the way, we're talking with Reckless Eric here, right? In case you were wondering. I don't know how we got on that tangent, but I'm glad we did. And I'm glad you're enjoying... how long are you in America for? You don't live here.
No, but I've been coming here a lot because my girlfriend lives here, and she's American, but she's coming over to live in England, so...
Oh, what does she do, by the way?
She's a licensed veterinary technician.
Oh...
Yeah,
we have two dogs at home, so... Yeah.
All right, she'd know what to do with them.
She would or she wouldn't?
She would.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, it's another world.
Do you have pets? Does she have pets or
cats?
Oh, sounds like her thing. Or are they yours also?
Oh, a lot of cats. Yeah, we're covered in cat hair, though. No, they're great. I like cats.
And we're back to the pussy jokes. But no, I will not. I will refrain.
Pussy jokes, yeah.
So how'd you meet her, by the way?
I knew her ex-husband.
Oh, okay. And now
so like that, really.
All right, let's backtrack. Let's really go back and talk the talk that you've had to talk for I guess the past 30 years now.
I divert you into this other, and we end up talking some other rubbish because I'm so. Sick of talking about the normal rub. I'm not actually.
Okay. Because I'm a stubborn little Jew, and I will eventually get back to to the important. Well, no, Coney Island is important too, but we also want to give people context as to. I'm sure they know who you are, but even if they don't, or they just want to remember along with you.
Well, a load of people have probably turned off. They're going, we don't want to hear some whatever talking about Coney Island.
I'm sure they're fine with you talking about it. If you start talking politics and dissing America and Bush, then, by all means, but then we'll lose probably half our audience.
Oh, right. Okay. Well,
But feel free.
I won't do that yet.
Yet. Okay. I'll hold you to that.
Yeah. Maybe that will be a good closing down program. Do you have clothes down? They used to have it in England before the telly started running, the radio and everything started running all night. They used to have clothes down and they used to play God Save the Queen.
We would have sermonette. I remember this from my childhood. It was like a little 5-minute, a priest, or usually a priest, occasionally a rabbi. They'd throw us a sop now and then. Would give us a little short, semi-religious, but not too, like, you know, Jesus-y speech. Then they would have the flag waving and play the Star Spangled Banner. And then either you would hear, and just see snow on the, speckled snow. Or if it was a more advanced television station, you would see color bars and...
So they should bring all that back. I used to have one on Southern TV in the 80s that was a program that I put on late at night before they shut down. It was called Company, and it was 10 minutes. And it seemed to be taking place in someone's kitchen, and it had a sort of scrub pine table. And round it, there was a nun where a nun... in sort of like, you know, nun's gear, but casual nun's gear.
Right.
Not just with the headdress and a frock on or something.
And, a wimple and a bra. Yeah, so,
yeah, yeah. And a rabbi in an old pullover. And then there was a vicar who was young and trendy who just alluded to the fact that he played in a band every so often. And various other kind of normal-looking people, and they used to sit round a table, and they'd all be cradling these cups of mugs of Maxwell House coffee and that, and talking about stuff, you know, as I mean, it sounds like a joke, doesn't it, really?
No.
A rocking vicar, a nun, and a rabbi sat round the table.
You know, it would sound like a joke, but there's actually a very popular program on sort of public access here that involves a rabbi and a priest.
It was my favorite program. It was so ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, it would come on, and they would be in the middle of it, and they wouldn't notice that the viewers had joined, and then one of them would say, oh, yeah, we were talking about... how God is omnipresent in the supermarket, and I was just saying I was coming back from a gig the other night, and, you know, the vicar and that, and they would talk about stuff for about 10 minutes, very soothing and completely ridiculous, but they don't have that anymore.
No, well, because it's 24/7 everything.
Bad American made-for-TV films.
Well, yeah.
I'm an expert on them.
Okay, which is the best worst?
Oh, I can't tell you.
The one with the most nudity, of course, obviously.
They just mold together, they go into one.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think they just cut the stuff off in strips, actually.
And they all star Michael Pear, for some reason, or who else do they? Well, anywho. How did we get on that? Okay.
Oh, dear, we can't get on to the right subjects, can we?
Well, there's no wrong subject on Dave's Gone By, especially when we're talking with Reckless Eric Goulding. I'm going to hold you to that question, Ben.
I either go either on under Eric Goulding or Reckless Eric.
But not both.
I don't put the two names together.
Okay, well, where did the Reckless tag come from?
Right, well, it was 1976. I just made my first record for Stiff Records. And... everybody was operating under pseudonyms because everybody who was involved with Stiff Records was signing on, which means claiming benefit or welfare, as you call it over here. The dole.
Oh, you were on the dole while still... Okay, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. It was how it all worked.
Ah.
You know, it's terribly funny that now our Prime Minister is very proud of Britain's third largest export is rock music or whatever. It's one of the biggest industries that the country has. And it's built on benefit fraud.
Well, at least that segment of it, you know, yeah.
So everybody had
Scylla Black was, you know.
Everybody had a name. Captain Sensible, Rat Scabies, Dave Vanium in the Damned.
Right, yes.
Elvis Costello, who was, for a while he was D.P. Costello, but of course his real name is Declan McManus.
Right.
Which means I've just blown his cover and the authorities are going to be into him for...
No, he put his name, that name on a couple of his labels. He's been changing, forever,
Yeah, I know.
In fact, Napoleon Dynamite was, again, one of those...
But isn't that someone else? Isn't that a bad...
It is now.
Is it a bad made-for-TV film or something? I'm a bit...
I got it from the local library just last week to see it, because it got such good reviews. Halfway through, I was like, it's not funny, it's just strange. Which is a shame. It's about a high school kid. You're diverting the subject again, but it's about a high school kid who's an ultra, ultra nerd, and not even a likable, lovable nerd, but a really nasty, geeky pencil neck nerd who's miserable to everybody, and everybody's miserable to him. And that's pretty much... he's got this brother who's also nerdy, and they all do nerdy, awful things.
Haven't most films all been made already?
Well, all films have all been made already. They just keep remaking them. But it's different. I will give it that. It's not quite like any teenage film you've ever seen, but that doesn't necessarily mean you want to see this one. Yeah.
WGBB, the place for you and me. We're one big family. And let me make one thing clear. There's so many shows to hear, like Joyce Keller, the radio psychic. Wednesdays, 11 p.m., she's one fine uncanny chick. And then there's Mike Shamari's Instrumental Invasion. Thursdays at 8, it's Sweeping the Nation. And Fridays at 6, if you can't get a date, there's Bonnie D. Graham telling you how to mate. Saturday nights, the Mikey and Jimmy Show. For rock and roll comedy, the place to go. And make sure to listen on Sundays, too. At 7 p.m., it's Joe Salzo's Worldview. So many programs on 1240 AM. If you had half a brain, you tune in to them. Yes, WGBB is the place to listen all week long. Joyce Keller, Wednesdays at 11. Mike Shamari with Smooth Jazz, Thursdays at 8. Long Island's Dating with Bonnie D. Graham, Friday nights at 6. And Politics on Worldview with Joe Saldone, Sundays at 7. So if you love Dave's Gone By, give these other shows a try. They serve your community. If you listen, you'll know why. The groovy.
Yeah, this is Reckless Eric on Dave's Gone By. So where were we?
We were in 1976.
76.
Right. How did you get from being little Eric Goulden to being a stiff label artist?
I was an art student. I used to I studied fine art, painting and sculpture. For 4 years. When I left school, I was at art college in Bristol in England, and then in Hull in the northeast of England. I used to play in bands. I went to art school because that's where everybody else went. John Lennon, Ray Davies.
Both of the Stones, I think.
Pete Townsend. I'm not sure. No, Mick Jagger didn't go to art school. He went to the London School of Economics.
Oh, right. Right.
Yes, it shows, doesn't it?
Well, they all got rich enough.
They all got rich enough, but Mick Jagger got richer than the others, yeah. But anyway, so obviously I had to go to art school because that's where you went. And I was quite into it all as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I got a degree and all that kind of thing, so...
I mean, we're discussing off the air Neil Innes, who had been on this program a few months ago.
Neil went to art school, yes, and I know Neil well.
And he still pursues it. His wife does flower arranging, and I mean, they are still seriously into that aspect. Do you still do any physical arts?
No, not really. I mean, I do a lot of funny drawings, which I do with a computer program.
Oh.
I won't use anything sophisticated to do it. But, yes, I do that, I wanted to do music. So when I left art school, that was about 1976, and I'd been writing songs. I used to write, and that was an odd thing to do then.
Cool.
But if you came to write songs, if you came from the provinces and you played in a band, no one ever had original songs. Everybody did cover versions.
We're not talking about the original British Invasion here. We're talking about the past that. So I would assume writing songs...
Yeah.
You would have been influenced by Beatles and...
One of, professional bands that you might call professional who got a deal, a label, a manager and all the rest of it would obviously they'd be writing songs, but little local groups never did, and I was in like little local groups, and we used to do Bo Diddley numbers and Chuck Berry numbers
and Skiffle and Lonnie Donegan.
Oh, no, we didn't do. No, no, oh, no. I'm not that old.
Doesn't have to be that old. You know.
No, we used to do Small Faces numbers like Sha-la-la-la Lee and what else? Can't remember now.
Okay. What were some of the names of the groups that you were in back then? Do you remember?
I was in a great art school band called Addis and the Flip Tops.
Addis and the Flip Tops, or Addis and the Flip Tops?
Addis and the Flip Tops. Flip Tops, yes.
Cool. And that was that kind of music. Do you remember any of the other names of the bands you were in?
I was in a band called the Rubies, who were called Ruby and the Takeaways for a while. I was the bass player in a dreadful hard rock band for a while. I don't even want to talk about that. And I played in working men's club bands and stuff, which was hard because, like, you had to play what you were told to play.
And it was audience requests basically ruled the day.
No, it was just like you had to do 3 20-minute sets, and you got to play a lot of dreadful stuff.
So how did you break out of that into writing your own songs and being more...
I got tired of playing Chuck Berry songs really badly, because like, we could never play them any good anyway. We could never play anything very good. And I said, look, we might be rubbish, and like, if we had our own songs, they might be rubbish too, but at least we wouldn't be the same as everyone else. So yeah. I thought, well, I was the bass player, and like, and then I wanted to be the singer, and I thought, well, if it was my songs, they couldn't stop me. I knew I couldn't sing very well.
You have a distinctive...
I have got better.
She turned you into a newt. But you got, yes. Sorry, that's a
what's that?
Obscure reference. Sorry, yeah.
An obscure reference.
Python, yeah, okay.
yes.
Yeah, sorry, so I take you off track there, but okay. So you started writing for yourself and to prove that you could, and singing yourself.
Well, yeah, I started writing these songs, and like, they got a bit better, I suppose, and we're playing our own stuff. We started to get a lot better in this last band I was in at art school time. And then everyone said, you shouldn't be up here. You should go to London. So I left art school and off I went down to London, where the streets were paved with musicians or whatever.
Right. I mean, it was legitimately a scene. Did you realize it at that point that there was, quote-unquote, a scene?
No, there wasn't. Well, there was something in the air around 74, 75. We started to realise there was some kind of thing in the air. And it started to gather pace by 76. And when I got there and I saw The Clash, I saw The Clash on one of their first gigs, and they were supporting a band called The Kirstall Flyers, who were like a pub rock band that got successful. The Clash were quite life changing because it was just so confrontational.
Right.
That was when Keith Levine was still in the Clash. They had 3 guitars.
What? Strong. There was a Jew in the Clash?
Keith Levine.
Well, I don't know. But.
Well, yeah, Mick Jones. He's Jewish.
Good heavens! Yay! Yay
there
for
go.
Didn't know that. Are you? I mean, you have semi-Jewish name, but I wonder.
I don't know. My name is a bit Jewish, and sometimes I wave my hands around when I talk, but I don't.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's great. Send your hate mail to. actually, we should mention that. We'll get back to this, but tell everybody that you do have a really, really cool website where they can find out about you, about all your CDs and all the stuff you're doing.
I doubt if anyone can find out anything much from my website, but I think it is quite cool in a way. It's recklesseric.com.
Oh, sure. That's easy. I mean, it's reckless with a W.
Of course it is, folks. Yeah.
What do the letters DFSX stand for? They stand for Dave's Gone By, that's what, because DFSXRadio.com is rebroadcasting vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By every Thursday night at 8 and 11 Eastern Time. So you hear me on GBB and then listen to me on DFSXRadio.com every Thursday night at 8 and 11. It's all the Dave you could ever want, kinda. Wait, did he just say these are the Daves?
These are the Daves.
He did. Van Morrison is singing about Daves gone by, and the CDs we have of the show. Dozens of complete episodes available on cassette and CD. $14 a piece for CDs, $12 for cassettes, and cheaper if you buy more. Go to davesgoneby.com and get these precious presents today.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, brought to you by Total Theater's Performing Arts Insider, The Theater Magazine, and Hewlett Minuteman Press on Broadway in Hewlett, the copying and printing source. And your source for Dave's Gone By information is davesgoneby.com, where you can find out about my book, about how to buy vintage CDs of the show, how to advertise or sponsor segments on the program, and how to listen to vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By on your computer. You can do that every Thursday night at 8 and 11 right after this show on DFSX Radio. Well, that's a channel on the internet radio portal live365.com. If none of that makes any sense to you, just go to davesgoneby.com, click on the links, and you can listen to those older episodes of Dave's Gone By right on your computer, 8 and 11 tonight. If you'd rather keep your dial here on WGBB, you'll hear Mike Shaveri's instrumental invasion of smooth jazz at 8 for the last time. Tonight is Mike's final show before he goes to another radio station, WCWP, where he's going to get a full 2 hours. Plus, it's a station with a lot more jazz programming. So I wish Mike the best of success with the Mike Shaveri Show, Wednesdays at noon on WCWP. Which means, hey, starting next week, no more conflict of interest. Now, I can tell everybody to listen to vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By after my show on Thursday nights at 8, and not feel guilty for trying to pull them away from Mike's show to visit mine on the net. And yes, I am still hosting Filler Up at 9 on GBB, an hour of eclectic but selective music. See how everything works out for the best eventually? Well, not everything. In fact, not most things. But whatever does work out on this show, I owe to some terrific people. Program director Tom Ross, and above all, my beloved and wonderful wife, Joyce. And I certainly love the way things worked out tonight. You know, when I invited Reckless Eric to be on this program, with all his background in the punk scene and his life in England and the Stiffs roster, it didn't occur to me that we'd spend the first 20 minutes talking about Coney Island and the New York City subway system. But you know what? It was fun. And that just gives us an excuse to continue the conversation, which we will next week. Part 2 with Eric Golden. More music, more memories, more banter with this very funny, very entertaining man. We'll go out with Local, a track from Eric's new album, Bungalow High, and we'll say a big Bungalow High to Eric again next week, 7 p.m., Thursday, May 12th, on the 127th episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. Happy Mother's Day, Mommy. I love you. And gone by.
This is Reckless Eric on Dave's Gone By. Dave has gone by. And it's WGBB. But I expect there'll be another one coming in a minute.
I don't wanna be a big fish swimming around in a goldfish bowl. Well, I don't wanna be like them. I don't wanna be like them. I don't wanna be part of anything. I don't even wanna see them. Yeah.
socks and bicycle frames around lampposts that be loud.
Making their way from the depot in